Our next presenter is Christy Buckland, talking about developing organic quinoa cropping systems for Utah.
Good afternoon. I'm Christy Buckland, like she said, from Utah State University. I'm a PhD student there. And together with Jennifer Reeve and Earl Creech, we've been developing organic quinoa cropping systems for our area. This project is a very small part of a huge multi-state ORAI-funded project. It has cooperators at Washington State University of Kevin Murphy and Oregon State University of Stephen Mercado. They're working on all sorts of aspects of growing quinoa in our country, variety development, salinity tolerance, and so forth. So this is a much smaller project as part of that. So today we'll talk about current quinoa production throughout the world, some objectives and our hypotheses on our project, the field design, and then we'll go through results with grain yield and plant growth, followed by a few soil health indicators and some conclusions. So most of our quinoa is grown in the red box on this screen here. It's an ancient crop. It's been cultivated, as far as we can tell, over 3,000 years. It's indigenous, or thought to be indigenous, to South America, the area around the Andes Mountains. And there, right now, we know of about 5 ecosystem types of quinoa. And those ecosystems range anywhere from a coastal system through a rainforest to high mountain plateaus. Quinoa has been seen to do well under drought and salinity tolerance. With low temperatures or high temperatures, it's a very diverse crop, and there are thousands and thousands of varieties, mostly in Peru and Bolivia. In our country, we only have access to about 160 or so varieties through the USDA seed bank, so our options are a little bit more limited. Traditionally, it's grown with low fertility inputs in a more of a subsistence type of situation. So we know that a little bit about its cropping history and how it's been developed through the years. The production within the U.S. is very, very limited. One of the major producers is White Mountain Farms in the San Luis Valley of Colorado. They have a high mountain plateau. I think they're at about 8,500 feet with a short growing season, and have developed varieties for that type of climate over the last 30 years. Quinoa, if you're not familiar, is a really high nutrient content. It's a complete protein. It's also gluten-free, and most of it's produced organically. So in the health food area, it's really grown in popularity in recent years. In fact, it's so popular it made the Super Bowl Bud Light commercial a couple years ago, if you don't remember. Within the U.S., there's a very clear demand. 62% of all of the exports worldwide come to the U.S., which is more than 10 times any other country. So clearly there's a market for it here within our own borders. That's a 55% increase in the market value within the last 5 years. Again, a valuable resource for us if we can tap into it. Because of its diverse history and how it's been adapted to climatic conditions that are very wide-ranging in South America, and the fact that it does well under low organic inputs, we think that it might be a good novel crop into our organic systems to help give our growers another option for a nice market value. There's very limited literature published about the growing needs and the fertility needs of quinoa. However, there are some indications that with increased N fertilization, you can have a good impact on increased seed yield as well. So we thought that growing our quinoa with things like cover crops, green manures, and intercropping that can provide us that extra N source will be beneficial to a quinoa system. So for our project, our objective was to measure the quinoa productivity and soil health in 3 organic cropping systems that are common to our area. 2 of our hypotheses were that quinoa grown with compost and intercropped with clover or strip cropped with hairy vetch will have greater yield than when grown after just a tilled hairy vetch. The second hypothesis is intercropping or strip cropping will increase soil quality indicators as well. So for our trial, we used a split plot design with 4 reps in a single variety. In 2013, the variety was Oro de Valle, and due to seed availability and very poor germination rates, in 2014 we needed to switch varieties to Cherry Vanilla. Both of those are commercially available. The whole plot factor in our intercropping trial was the cover crop treatments. So So each the field of 2013 was seeded to a vetch, 70% vetch, 30% winter wheat cover crop in the fall. In the spring, the first treatment was tillage only, so there was a termination via tillage and followed by quinoa planting. Our second treatment was an underseeded clover, which was seeded about 45 days after the quinoa was seeded. And then the third treatment was a vetch strip crop mow and blow. So if you can see on the top picture there is the strip crop where we left the vetch mixed standing while we tilled out the center strip for quinoa planting. So we had two rows of quinoa and left the vetch, and we mowed that and to simulate a side discharge mower, which we don't have. We mowed it and raked it on top of the quinoa rows. The split plot factor were two compost levels where we had 11 tons per acre in the spring of 2013 before both years, or no compost at all. The bottom picture, you can see what a tilled plot looks like. We had about a 15 by 30 foot plot. So here are our total nitrogen inputs for each input system. You can see across the top are the cropping systems, undersown clover, tillage, and strip crop, and then down the left-hand side are the actual inputs during the different years. At the bottom, you see the total nitrogen inputs for the systems, and you can see that the strip crop in both years with compost had had the most total nitrogen input, followed by the strip crop without compost, and which was very similar to the undersown clover or tillage with compost for total N. The least amount of N came in the undersown clover or tillage without compost treatments. So there's a pretty big range of what we applied here. So how does that affect the actual plant growth? In 2013, we had no seed set, which you can see on the top picture there. We think that it was due to the high temperatures, the coincidence of high temperatures and flowering in that year. The varieties that we have are known to have some sensitivity at anywhere between 90 and 100 degrees, and those are frequently seen in Cache Valley where this trial was. So we had some unfortunate timing as far as high seed temperatures there. In 2014, we had a whole different situation weather-wise, and we're able to set seed, which is the bottom picture there. You can see the milky white part of the seed that's still growing, and it's probably 30 to 45 days out from harvest. So to combat this, we had we took biomass partitioning data for both years as well. So how did this affect what we actually got? This is seed weight. So it's obviously only 2014 data, 1 year of data. And on the x-axis, you have the different cropping systems, undersown clover, tillage, and strip crop. The units on the seed weight, this is a single row of quinoa and about 10 foot of length, so that we can look at the individual impact of what that nitrogen availability is on our quinoa weight. You can see that the strip crop had the highest seed weight. Over the undersown clover and tillage was in between. But really, when we're looking at this system, we're using at least half as much land as we are in quinoa production as we are in the strip crop area. So if we scale this to a per acre basis and what we would actually put in the field, we lose half of the land to our strip crop, which gives us an effective seed weight for the system that puts tillage as the highest yielding in that system over undersown clover, with strip crop in the middle. Seed weight was also greatly affected by compost. So quinoa that received compost had a higher seed weight than without. Quinoa biomass, so this is the above ground total biomass for our plants. So it includes the panicles, stems, everything. You can see that in 2014 and 2013, in undersown clover and tillage, there was no difference, but in the strip crop, we had significantly higher biomass in 2014. And again, compost did greatly affect our dry weights as well. You can see that the compost in 2014 had the highest, but in regardless of year, with compost was greater than without compost. So when we look at this, we think, perhaps there was something, we know how much N we put into the system, how much was the plant actually seeing, and is that really causing the differences between the above ground growth. Here's a snapshot soil nitrate. This was a 30-day test combined over years, and you can see there's really not a whole lot of difference in soil nitrate availability at this point. We did not test soil nitrate for the rest of the season, but you can see the only cropping system that showed a difference between compost and without compost was the tillage in the center of your screen, and that we suspect is due to the very poor growth of the seedlings in that particular treatment combination. So what did affect the growth is more than anything, we think, is the compost. You can see here is the soil Olson P. You know, we had a great talk about that at the beginning of the session. We are very, very low in this field. If you notice, the without compost line is about 3 to 3.5 maybe, which is exceptionally low. We have very high calcareous soils, and so phosphorus is an issue for us, obviously. And when we put on compost, we think that allows the plant to grow enough to be able then to access those nitrogen stores and the different treatments that are available. Not only did compost affect the plant growth, but it also affected soil microbial biomass. This is microbial biomass is measured by substrate-induced respiration, and we can see with and without compost in 2013 and 2014. The highest was in 2014 with compost, and there was obviously in 2014 there was a greater difference between the without compost as well, which may be more of a function of weather and timing, the timing of the rains. As microbial biomass did vary a little bit also with the cropping system. Again, same cropping systems here, and we can see that in the undersown clover and in the strip crop, that between 2013 and 2014 there was a difference, and 2014 showed an increase in microbial biomass, whereas the tillage didn't have a difference between the two seasons. 2 years is not a very long time to run a cropping systems trial to look for changes in the microbial biomass or structure or function. However, this may lead to further interesting down the road. In conclusion, we had heat intolerance, which was obviously an issue for us. No seed set in 2013, and we did have seed set in 2014. There was a strong influence of compost on soil phosphorus and plant growth and yield. There was a minimal impact on soil N status, at least as measured by our 30-day test. We had a lack of N response, which we think points to P as a limiting factor for this particular field and crop. Strip cropping did increase the seed yield, but when you take into account the total cropping area, tillage was greater. The microbial biomass tended to increase with compost and over time. And bottom line is the suitability of quinoa for our region is really in question due to that temperature sensitivity. I'd like to thank the funding source, USDA ORAI, and our collaborators and committee members and cooperators.
So I think we have time for one or two questions.
Okay. Yes.
When did you plant? What's your recommended planting time?
Well, if you noticed, the cover crop was quite a bit different, the inputs between the 2 years. The first year we planted in June, right at the beginning of June, which was solely based on seed availability. And so that put us smack dab into August, where it's the hottest part of the season. So the next year we moved that back until late April. So it was really, really big difference, and we sacrificed a lot of top growth on the cover crop to do that. And as fortune would have it, we had terrible germination. We had less about 50% field germination that year. We originally seeded with Oro de Valier, and then we had to go back and reseed with Cherry Vanilla. So it put us back to June that year when we got the final crop in, and it just worked out with the weather. We had an abnormal summer that we had late. We had an early cool in August, so it was just honestly a crapshoot. And we had fields all over the valley, and it was different everywhere. So
we should probably move on.
Okay.
Thank you.